everybody. Welcome to Satsang with G. I'm very glad you're all here with me. we've been having a lot of technical difficulties today. I've got somebody working behind the scenes right now to get this going on YouTube. We are live on Facebook. That one does appear to be working as far as I can tell. So at any rate, hello everyone and welcome. This week's episode I wanted to talk about, it's really kind of an important one. I called this episode The Mystic Christian. And I got very interested in the whole, you know, like everybody else growing up in America, especially I grew up in the Midwest, right, in the 50s and the 60s. So, I mean, there was, you know, mainstream Christianity was all there was to religion. I don't think I think I was in high school before I met somebody who was Jewish. There was a couple of kids that were Greek Orthodox that I went to grade school with. And that was it. That was the limit. I mean, it was a hopelessly white suburb of Chicago. I was like 17 before I actually met a black person in person. So it's a very different world than we. I now live in Astoria, Queens, which is the most culturally, ethnically, and racially diverse place, city on the planet. It's just like everything from everywhere, which makes for really great food. But at any rate, I was not what you'd call a particularly normal kid. I had a lot of problems. My mother was not healthy, that she was mentally ill, which made life challenging, to say the least. Made it seem as if, you never quite knew who was going to show up at any given time. And the impact it had on me was pretty extraordinary. I just never relaxed, never felt loved, never felt calm, never felt like I was, that it was actually my home, which in fact she told me it wasn't, that it was hers and I was a guest and, you know, I could leave anytime. And that then later she'd be all, you know, nice and completely forgot what she'd said the day before. So it was less than predictable. So at any rate, at the age of 15, the very tender age of 15, I got really into music. I started playing music when I was like five and I had a talent for it. And then at the age of 12, I got, you know, the Beatles happened, right? And so me, like every other kid in the world, decided to become a pop star. And so I started playing in bands and like, we were actually very good. Got to the point where in my late teens, I could actually make a living at it. Well, as good a living as you could. I never became the rock star, but I could make a living at it. But at 15 years old, I discovered drugs. And after 15 years of never feeling calm, of always feeling on edge, it was the first time I'd actually relaxed. Needless to say, I got quite involved in it. So that by the time I was, in a very short period of time, I was just doing it every day. And by the time I was 19, I was really pretty messed up. But I knew it. I knew I was messed up. I knew that that a disaster was ensuing. And I just really thought I was washed up. Well, I was living in the middle of Wisconsin, playing in a beer band. Back in those days, if you were, they had under 21 clubs, 18-year-old clubs where you could buy, where they served beer to basically in a college town, which is where I was. So you could eke out a living, you know, playing in bar bands across Wisconsin. I was sleeping on the floor. I spent all the money I had to get there. It was not the luxurious pop star life I had envisioned. And pretty much my life was going out playing and then getting stoned. If I wasn't playing, I was getting stoned with a bunch of people doing some kind of drug, everything from speed to acid to pot to hashish and the like. Well, one night I had this extraordinary experience. It was as if something just decided to intervene on my behalf because I simply couldn't do it myself. And I was with a group of people, as I normally was, you know, sitting around in a circle, passing the bowl of, this time it was hashish, some very powerful stuff. It was all right. It was all normal. Everything was good. Everything was going the way. But all of a sudden, completely out of nowhere, I was struck with the most horrific terror I had ever known. I was simply seized with such a terror that my entire body froze up, literally froze up. I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. My throat tightened up and I was actually wheezing. I couldn't breathe. My head was pounding. My heart was pounding out of my chest. And I was convinced that I was dying. And fact of the matter is, at that time, I would have welcomed it. I would have thought it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Well, I sat there for a while, just kind of looking around. All I could move, literally all I could move, was my eyes. I was frozen in place, and I could just look at my eyes could look around, and that's as much as I could do. Faces were distorted. I mean, I was in hell. Well, completely without warning, without any input or command from me, suddenly my body just got up, walked out the door, and started to walk. I was completely on autopilot. I had no control over it whatsoever. It was just moving. It was turning corners, walking around. I walked for about 30, 45 minutes. And suddenly it stopped, it turned right, and I was standing there on a bridge, looking down into the most horrifically polluted, ugly river you could imagine. It smelled, it was pretty much dead. It was just this mucky brown cesspool of a thing. And that river that I was standing there looking into was at one time one of the cleanest, most pristine rivers in the country that had just been completely destroyed. Well, I just went off. I just started ranting about how horrible the world was and all the terrible things that we were doing. We'd taken these beautiful things and utterly destroyed them. And I'm all the while I'm feeling I did exactly the same thing to me. I took this beautiful promise and gifts and all of these things, and I just destroyed it. I absolutely ruined it. I didn't deserve to live. Well, needless to say, I was at my wit's end. If that bridge had been high enough, I would have jumped off. But but it wasn't. It was 10 feet. I would have only gotten wet. But in the middle of this rant, in the middle of this incredible rant of stuff just pouring out everywhere, I was just venomous and ugly. I heard a voice, an extremely loud voice from behind me that said, "Look closer." I was stunned. There was nobody there, but this voice was so loud and had so much authority that I obeyed. And I looked closer. I started looking down into the river. I go, "What? What's in the river?" And it said, "Look closer. Look really close." And so I did. I put all my attention, all of my focus, all of my energy into that water. And all of a sudden, I started to shrink. I just started to get smaller and smaller and smaller. It was like, and then everything around me was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And before I knew it, I was actually in the water. I was floating in space, and all around me I could see molecules. The molecules of the water and the molecules of all the pollution. And the voice said to me, "Look at the water." So I did. I looked, stared at the water, and it said, "Look. It's pure H2O, isn't it?" I said, "Yes, it is." And I said, "And the water and the muck, they're not touching, are they?" I said, "No, they're not." And I said, "So the water and the muck haven't actually bonded, have they?" I said, "No." He says, and so if there was a way you could actually separate them, you'd have the same pristine, perfect, pure water you always did, wouldn't you?" I said, "Yeah, you would." I was stunned. They weren't even touching. And then the voice, then the hammer came down. And the voice said, "Greg, that's you." It was as if something had just pulled off the top of my head and started pouring in light. I was just suddenly filled with this incredible light and freedom and openness and peace. The next thing I knew, I was standing back on the bridge. My heart rate was normal. I could control my body again. My head wasn't pounding. My breath was back to normal. My throat was opened. And I was standing there with this most remarkable feeling, and a feeling that at first I didn't recognize, because I don't think I'd ever felt it in my life. And that was, I felt loved. Within 6 months, my life had completely transformed. I was back in school. I was getting A's. I switched from drums to piano. Shortly thereafter, I found, I started writing music. I started hearing music. All the interest in drugs and all, it just absolutely fell away. And little by little, as I grew and I matured, it became my life's work to find the way in which to separate that pure water from the muck that, from our normal viewpoint, looks like it has merged and become one. When in fact, the original pristine you, the thing that I now call original innocence, was never ever touched by any of it. It took me a lot of years to work that out. I finally did. And the process that I put together, I called inner reconciliation. And I teach it at the Master Heart Institute. But in the process of doing that, I became interested in all of the spiritual and religious writings I could get my hands on. Now, as I mentioned before, a kid growing up in the Midwest, there wasn't much to get your hands on. I mean, I think I was like 25 or something, 23 when I got a book, some book about yoga that I saw in the library. There were no yoga studios. Nobody had any idea what it was. But my main interest, because like everybody growing up in the U.S., I'd been raised a Christian, and I was filled with all the Bible stories. I started examining them more closely, and I had access to different translations. I had access to concordances. I had access to commentary, including the Interpreter's Bible, which is like this 47-volume set of all sorts of things, the historical aspects, everything you'd possibly about. I mean, just sliced every which way. And I begin to discover that what was commonly seen as just a historical event was actually depicting the event that had happened to me, this perception of your original purity, the original image and likeness of God, if you will, and that it had actually never, ever been touched. And so I was just absolutely floored. I started reading the traditional literature through completely different eyes. I began to see it as what they refer to as the new tongue of spirit, a completely different interpretation of what you're reading, which brings out an import in it that otherwise would be completely lost. One thing that really illustrates this is the story of the divine child. You know, the virgin birth of Christ. We celebrate that all at Christmas time. It's a beautiful story. When you look at it historically, it doesn't make, you know, it either doesn't have much meaning at all. It certainly has no much meaning for you personally. It gets turned into an event of, you know, proving that somebody was absolutely special. But I found that same idea of a virgin birth appears in many, many different cultures. And what it was referring to was not a particular individual being born, but the appearance within human consciousness of that original innocence, that which was not really born in sin, but emerged directly from the divinity, which is, of course, every single one of us. And I saw in that entire story of him being born and Herod wanting to kill him and his parents taking him off to Egypt and the way the whole thing unfolded, I saw this perfect example of how that original purity that is all of us gets protected, hidden away from the world, so that it can actually grow to maturity. And every individual has the opportunity to reawaken that sense of inner purity. It's hard to describe, but try to imagine yourself without any of your conditioning. Imagine you living in the body, living in this life, your regular life, but without getting triggered by all the events of life, without having a self-image that is, you know, either dysfunctional or maybe even self-destructive like I had. Right? That you didn't have those. They didn't even arise. They didn't touch you. You know, in order to be conditioned, there needs to be something there to first that hasn't been conditioned. So there's something absolutely spotless, absolutely immaculate, that's never been touched by any of this. So little by little, as I matured and grew in this, it wasn't at first, it took a long time to actually sort all of this out. In the process, I had to learn all sorts of different psychological techniques, self-help techniques, personal development stuff. I learned about, gestalt and voice dialogue and inner child work and some other kinds of things. I learned different traditions, Zen, Advaita Vedanta, even a little Sufi mysticism. And it all eventually came together so that I really came to understand how the nervous system works, how conditioning happens, how you can, in fact, be absolutely pristine and perfect just as you are, and yet still have all the problems, all these things that are happening to you. And the answer is really quite simple. It's not really you. We've just mistaken the functioning of our nervous systems being responding to the environment in which they were born. We've mistaken those for ourselves. And that is what has made us think that we're broken when in fact we're not. So in the process, I've just gained a lot of really interesting information about and insights into the nature of these stories, which I think are very valuable to look at, simply because they're the stories that make up the culture. Probably everybody listening. I mean, I do have a couple of students that are in people in Africa and some in Asia and the like, which have a different cultural background. But the majority of people who are aware of me, listening to me, are from the West. And so the biblical stories really make up the cultural framework that we live in. And the interpretation of them is not insignificant. And so it's my desire to put a different spin on the whole thing, to show something much different, a much different version of you than you might have seen, and to come to terms with what the real spiritual journey is. It was because of that event that happened when I was 19, so that is now, 46 years ago? Yeah. It is what made me a spiritual teacher. It was a moment of pure grace. It came out of nowhere. You know, I'd had a little bit of interest in that kind of stuff, but I was certainly not a candidate for any kind of awakening, any kind of spiritual growth. I just wanted to be a rock star and have a lot of money and chicks. I mean, that's all I wanted. but clearly life had very different ideas. So I'm encouraging people to dial in. I got so discombobulated with all the technical difficulties, I don't have the phone number handy. You want to come online here for a second, Doug, and tell everybody what the phone number. Oh, there it is. So the number for the station is 888-627-6008. I'm happy to take your questions about maybe about what I experienced. Maybe you've had a similar experience. Maybe you have some kind of an anger towards your religious upbringing that you'd like to clear the air with, or maybe you would like to just ask a question about some other aspect of your life. So anybody that is people are calling in, the number I just gave, 888-627-6008, that is for calling in to speak to me. We've had actually probably about 10 people calling in thinking it was the to listen by the phone. That's a different number. And Doug, I think if Doug is going to give me that number right now so I can read it out to you. So if you're listening on something else, it's 605-475-1600, and you press #1 to get to station one. And there'll be listening, and you can listen on that phone. So if you're on Facebook and you want to listen on your phone or something, my apologies to the YouTube people. We for some reason we had it working perfectly last week and didn't have it working for Facebook, and this week it's working for Facebook, but not for YouTube. We will definitely get this all sorted out for sure. So I'd love to have some people ask me some questions on Facebook or on, but I do have some that I've had emailed to me that I'd like to ask about. Suppose I could take this. I take this opportunity to mention to everybody that I am going to be teaching a class on Thursday that is specifically about this subject. I'm calling it the Christian Mystic, and it is it's going to be a two-hour workshop where we're going to discuss a lot of the things that I've discussed right now. I'm going to go into some depths about some of the most common stories, like Jacob's conversion and the burning bush and Moses and the Exodus and all of that. Christ, the crucifixion, the meaning of God, and the like, which I think are just so enriching if you're from that culture. I've always felt that it's better to find the grains of truth in your own culture than to simply, you know, kind of uproot yourself and go to a different one. I know a lot of people have, you know, traveled to India to try to find the truth and kind of failed miserably because the contextual, the cultural difference is so huge. That there's so much in the metaphors and the things people take for granted that makes it a little bit more difficult to understand. Well, since there's nobody calling in, I'm going to take one of these questions here that I get emailed. This is an interesting question from somebody. This is from Lee in New York. She said, how can we form a healthy relationship with spirituality to the effect that we're not using our own spirituality to thrust upon others, to judge ourselves or others, to escape reality, etc.? And then she added, as a listener, I always like to hear about practical tools I can use or things I can put into effect in my life right now. Things that are accessible and actionable. I want to comment about the second part of this first, then I'll go back to the first one. And I think one, and it actually sheds light on her first part of the question too. How do we form a healthy relationship with spirituality? Not thrust it on others, not judge ourselves, not use it as an escape. This desire, I want to have some tools I can put into action right now that are accessible and actionable. That's a course on success. That's not spirituality. Spirituality is not a set of behaviors you implement. It's not a code you follow. It's not a system. It's not even a belief system. When when spirituality gets confined to a set of beliefs, it becomes narrow and petty. That's where it turns into religious intolerance. It turns into fundamentalism, right? That's when we take spirituality and turn it into some kind of a practice or cultural buoy, something that is, this is the truth, this is why our culture is the best. You know, they do things like that. The real meaning of spirituality is the searching for your truth, the truth of who you are. Now, in my case, spirituality got thrust on me from the outside because there's simply no way I could have gotten it on my own. So whatever the truth is, it's obviously always present because it grabbed me. It wasn't something I could grab and hold on to and then make use of and put into my life and apply and make into an actionable thing. It was an experience, a direct experience of the divine within my own heart. Spirituality is when we come to the point where we become convinced that knowing who we are is more important than anything else. Knowing what the truth is, the truth of our own being, not a truth out there, not some kind of human knowledge that I gain and spit back out again, not some kind of idea I can get, oh, there it is, that's the truth. That's a belief system. That's not the truth. Because as we all know, what I used to believe, I don't believe anymore. And you can be pretty darn sure that whatever you believe right now, you're not going to believe it in the not too distant future. Human knowledge is constantly shifting. This is the search for that which never changes, the changeless, the timeless, which is also what is meant by the virgin birth. It was not about the birth of somebody because, you know, from a woman who hadn't had sex. The virgin birth is a metaphor for the essential purity and the unborn, that which is never born and never going to die, or God, if you prefer. That's what spirituality is. It is relentless in its pursuit, and it's ruthless in its questioning and challenging of assumptions. That's why I did a video just, I've got a video, I think it's going to be on YouTube tomorrow, either tomorrow or the next day, what I call the dangerousness of the mystic. The mystic, the one who has decided that knowing this truth is more important than anything, and that this truth doesn't lie in human knowledge, it lies within our hearts. That one is what's called a mystic by the mainstream, because they're completely outside the realm of the status quo, and they're a threat to the status quo. Because when the fundamental beliefs of a culture change, the culture changes, period. It is the fundamental beliefs that maintain it. It's what keeps it going. Without those beliefs, it completely falls apart. That's what's happening in the world around us. You can see it. The belief systems that used to hold culture together have all decayed. They've fallen apart. And something new has not yet risen to take its place. And during this period of time, of transition, when the new thing has not arisen, but the old thing is clearly not working, there will be those that are just absolutely committed to the old way, and they will get increasingly violent, increasingly aggressive, want to dogmatically hold on to what they had. They're the ones that tell you how wrong you are and how bad you are, and you're not, you know, the same kind of stuff. The time we're living in right now is the most difficult time an individual or a culture can go through. Period. There's no getting around it. So what I try to do is to get people out of the idea of seeing spirituality as just another perspective, another idea that you have that you can take and put into your life, and instead see it as an entire approach to life. I thank you, Doug. I can see that on that thing. We'll get to it in just a second. Thank you. Doesn't he have a beautiful voice? Boom, you have a caller. Spirituality is the way in which you see your life. It's the eyes through which you see, which of course changes everything. It will inevitably lead to circumstances and experiences and things changing because your perspective is changing. Right? It's like the scales fall off your eyes and you're no longer seeing the world through the eyes of this limited person, this eyes where the muck and the pure water have been combined. You see the world through the eyes of the pure water. That's the destination. And seeing the eyes through the eyes of the pure water is to see really through the eyes of God. And at that point, things become actionable, but spirituality doesn't become just one part of your life. You see that it is the actual substance and foundation of it. So, I got a question on Facebook, and I've got a caller on line one, Ethel. So, why don't you put her through, Doug?
Hi.
Hi, Ethel. How are you?
I'm great, GP. How are you?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I know you are. Okay. This is, I'm looking at just a little direction here. I so get it. I mean, I really am just in a state of grace. I really, really am. And I'm really getting, this is about letting it in, just relaxing and letting it in. It's already done. You know, I was telling somebody, it's like you have ice cubes and you keep running out of ice cubes, you know, but because you don't know that it comes from the water. You know what I'm saying? So you just tap into the source of this, and now this is it. Okay, but this is my, won't say issue, but let me ask you this. Okay, I'm really, like I say, in a state of grace most of the time. But an incident, and I just want to, this is not huge, but I was talking with someone, it was earlier today, and it just kind of caught me off guard because the person said something that just like really took me out of my alignment. Now, like I said, it wasn't a huge thing and I knew I could come back, but in terms of that, okay, let's put it like this. This person was guarded. She was very guarded. Now, mm-hmm. I know that if I'm running into somebody who's guarded, I know that has to be where that is coming from. It has to be me. I don't see that in myself. So mm-hmm. I guess my question is, how do you not get thrown off? I know I can come back, and maybe that's more important because I'm not going to stay out there more than 90 seconds. But when someone is just talking to you and you just kind of get thrown off your game, how do you, I guess the word is avoid that, or do you just experience that? How do you handle that?
Doug, can you mute her just for a second? Because I'm getting an echo back on her. So, boy, what a great question. And you know, Ethel, it's the question of our time. I kind of call it the great retreat crash. You know, you go away for a weekend or something and you have a great time, or, you know, you get to be by yourself or with a group of people and it's perfectly safe, perfect environment. And in that safe environment, the walls can come down, the defenses can come down, and you emerge and you really know what it feels like to be you. You know, that sense of innocence, the sense of playfulness, mm-hmm. the sense of not being overwhelmed by the circumstances. And it's very powerful and positive thing to have to take place. Then, you know, the retreat's over, you hug everybody, you go back home. It's Monday morning, you're yelling at your kids, you're flipping people off in the car, you're getting irritated with your boss at work, right? The big thing that I discovered was that the original innocence is there. That original purity is there, which is what you feel when you're in that safe space. Mm-hmm. But the nervous system, which has been conditioned to react to your environment in a particular way, is still doing exactly what it was programmed to do. Mm-hmm. So first thing to see is that it's not you. This is the reaction mm-hmm. of the energy system. Now, wow. What we do is we go, oh, Why is that happening? I got to do more work. We immediately personalize it. I got to do more work on myself. I got to take another class. I need another retreat. All of these things, because we now basically take a problem that isn't your problem. You bring it back onto yourself. You feel guilty. You judge yourself. You criticize yourself. And all that does is give fresh energy to the conditioning. It is not you. When you recognize that, you stop giving it energy. It stops being such a big deal. It isn't judgment anymore. And what happens is there's this enormous space of compassion that opens up towards the energy itself. That's why I call it inner reconciliation. So you're not trying to fix this energy anymore. You're not trying to do anything with it other than let it be what it is. But you've taken this different position, this position that I call the light at the center or the peacemaker. You know, when your body is threatened, it's going to be in a defensive posture. That's its nature. There's nothing you can do to stop it. Now, the vast majority of the problems that we face as adults is because we got into a defensive posture when we were very young and didn't come out of it. And so the energy doesn't realize that the danger has passed. It still assumes that the threat that it had created a behavior to protect itself from is still there, when it isn't. And there's only one way for it to drop out of that, and that is for the energy itself to see that the war's over, because it doesn't know that. Now, you can't force that to happen. And that's why I call inner reconciliation the end of the self-help treadmill. Because if I start out from the point of view that I know what's right, I know how I should be acting, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to get rid of all these negative emotions, and I'm going to clear up all these things, and I'm going to get rid of all the doubts, and I'm going to just throw this stuff to the curb, you're a threat to the very mechanism that's trying to protect you. You are being as aggressive towards trying to make it something other than what it is as was done to you that created the problem in the first place. What if you were to instead, the next time something flares up, just pull right back, give it complete attention, completely open to it, thank it for the job it's doing, and say, what are you trying to tell me?
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And a big question I use in inner reconciliation, what are you trying to protect me from? And you will find, if you really do that, with an open heart, totally allowing, which means you'll let any feeling come up. You know, you have no agenda, you have no posture, you have no resistance to anything. Whatever feeling, story, idea comes up is fine. That level of openness, it will just lay everything out on the table for you.
Love it. Wow. Go ahead.
No, you please.
Okay. That is just the perfect answer, because you know what? I'm not willing to go back down that slippery slope in terms of, okay, they said this to me and I'm upset. I'm not willing to go that way. I want to heal the energy, if you will. I don't know if that's the best word, but just be aware of it. That's just perfect what you said. I really get that, and I get it so much because I have listened to the inner reconciliation thing, and I do understand that that is still a part of my nervous system that's still in a defensive posture, simply because I have not given it an audience. I have not been aware of it. Now that I can become aware of it, and it's not me. Like you say, it's not even me. And that's what I want. That's exactly, because like I say, just if I see it, I understand. If someone presents in my experience, regardless what that person is about, I somehow attracted that. I am still vibrating in that space, or like you say, the nervous system is still in that defensive posture. And I just can, like you say, I can work with that, you know, in a reconciliation. What are you protecting me from? And it feels a lot easier because I am committed to just relax and letting it in. Thank you so much, GG.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you, Ethel.
Okay.
Yeah, that is so, that's in between the next call here. I just want to comment on that because you can feel the difference when you listen. You can feel the difference in the energy, you know, behind it. There's just such a gentleness. There's such a tenderness. There's such a lack of judgment about it and such a depth of understanding. I mean, when somebody approaches you and they want to fix you, they want to read you the riot act. They want to tell you all the things that are wrong with you and how you should figure how you mistreated them and all of that. I mean, how do you react? You know, you flip them off, you run away. I mean, the energy is just nothing but bad. But if somebody approaches you completely open-heartedly, right, completely accept, really wanting to hear about you, who you are, mm-hmm. what you're about, we all just melt in that presence. We can't help it. And why would it be any different with our own inner world, with the energies that make up the human system? It's not. And yet, for the most part, when we do self-help kind of techniques, as good as they are, and I use a lot of them, that's not it. It's about the context and the way you apply them. Most of the time when we do that, the attitude is that I know what is up and I need to fix this. I need to fix you. Nobody responds well. I mean, even if you agree that it's broken and you want to fix it, you're going to dig in your heels anyway. You're going to resist anyway. You're going to take the posture anyway, right? Because, because damn it, I'm not going to let them. Yeah, they're not going to tell me what to do, right? I mean, it's our nature. Everything is like that. You know, the bottom line is really this: it's simply unconditional love.
Yeah.
And unconditional love is not something out there. You know, it's not this angels and this kind of otherworldly. It's simply allowing everything to be as it is right here and right now. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like it. Sorry?
No, I want to comment on. Go ahead, you finish. I want to comment on one other quick thing. But go ahead.
Yeah, quick, because I've got 10 more minutes. I got somebody else online. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was on one of your calls last week. She was saying, and that happens. People are just, if someone else is not on this path, and I think that kind of comes back to, you really don't have anybody to talk to about this stuff, you know. And I think that's kind of what happened, you know, like I was kind of going someplace else and this person didn't want to hear. But listen, that's not adding anything to it. And you have another call. So you've satisfied my question. You
okay.
Really have.
Thank you, Ethel. Very good.
Thank you, DC. Okay.
What I recommend, you don't have anybody else in your life to talk to. I mean, at least buy one of my meditations for $7 or something. So you get in the graduate group in Facebook and there's plenty of people you can chat with about. And we have coaching programs, got all sorts of things to give long-term support to this. So thank you. Let me have line two. Bill in New York.
Yes, G. Thank you very much for taking my call. Love your program.
Hi, Bill. Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, perfectly, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for the work that you're doing and your contribution to humanity. And my question has to do with about, I think about a month and a half ago, I was in the hospital for 7 days, and I had this profound awakening experience where everything was love. You know, it was like everything was pouring love in my direction, and love was coming through me back, and everything was so simple. And all these wise things were coming out of my mouth. I was so articulate with what I was expressing. Mm-hmm. And it was really an extraordinary experience. And since then, my ego has kind of pulled me back into its mm-hmm. realm. And I'm just wondering what you would suggest doing to... help me return back to, you know, what I call home, you know, my true nature. Yeah.
Sweet, 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 sweet. Yes. Wonderful. First off, one of the biggest myths about awakening is that it's this one-time thing that happens ta-da, angels sing the Red Sea parts, you walk on water, and from that moment on, everything is ideal. It's such a huge myth. It's almost never the case. Matter of fact, I could probably count on one hand the number of people in all of history where that has been the case. And not even the Buddha. Remember, he was 6 years in the most intense austerity. You know, Christ was 33 years old. He had his time in the wilderness. God knows what he was learning. There's so little known about him from the time he was born to the time that one instance when he was 12, and then from 12 when he emerged at like 30 or 33. We know nothing about what he went through. Right? The same thing is true for most all of them. There's a few exceptions. There's one guy I know named Steve Jourdain. Recently, is a guy in France, and Ramana Maharshi, who's very, very well known. Here's what has to happen, and I call it the pre-awakening sadhana and the post-awakening sadhana. When you have the awakening and inner reconciliation, by the way, I designed to be both. When you have an experience of awakening, it is like you've gone home. There's no denying it. It is self-evident. Yep. It is self-luminous.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to confirm it for you. You know exactly what it is and what's happening.
Yeah.
But as I was explaining to Ethel, that vision has not permeated the whole system yet. This was the whole beauty of the experience that happened to me, where I saw the original innocence and the muck, and that the voice told me to find a way to separate the two. And to just realize that I thought I had it at first. I had to tell you, I thought I had it. This is it. Because after that, for a couple of years, the seas were just parting. I could do no wrong, absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden, wham, one horrible thing after another just started coming up. And I thought I'd fail, I'd fallen back, I thought I'd lost it. I tried to regain it. I went through all the steps, but that wasn't the point. What was really happening as I was learning the real mechanism by which the awakened vision colonizes the rest of the system. Because the false version of you, the separate self, the thing you call the ego, which is a good name for it, is not a thing. It is a pattern of reaction within the nervous system that we have projected upon a personhood. And so even though you see through that you're not that person anymore, all of the patterns of reaction that you associated with yourself prior to that are still there. They haven't gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so when something happens in your life, the trigger happens, the system reacts in the way that it's always reacted, right? And then you go, oh my God, I lost it. You get overwhelmed, the fear is there, the confusion is there, right? But in your case, and I'm almost running out of time, in your case, here's what I'd recommend. When the thing gets triggered like that, reconcile, like I was talking with Ethel, learn about inner reconciliation to actually be with that energy. But then notice that no matter what happens, no matter how extreme, no matter how beautiful or how horrible, it all happens in front of your awareness. Mm-hmm. That there is something aware of all of it.
Right.
And what you're aware of comes and goes, doesn't it? It's not always there. The trigger isn't there forever. Right. I mean, is there anything in your life that has stayed forever? Everything comes and goes. Nothing except the awareness of it.
Yes.
Put your attention on the one thing you've experienced that has not changed. The thing that gets confusing about an awakening experience is that when it's seen really clearly, momentarily, all of the conditioning just falls away and you feel completely that one.
Yeah.
It all comes back. The feelings disappear, right? But you are that one, whether you feel wonderful or terrible. If you stop trying to think that awakening means I feel good all the time, and instead realize that I am just aware all the time, you will have a very short route to full awakening, where you will be so centered back in the in your heart, back in the pure seeing, that what happens on the screen won't matter anymore, which of course means the less happens because there's less energy. Energy is feeding it. And that's what Christ meant when he said, I go unto my Father. He brings the sense of I back to that which is actually seeing what's happening rather than what is happening. It's okay if the nervous system freaks out. It's all right.
Yeah.
The seeing of it has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 1 minute, man. I have to cut off. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eugene.
Right.
Yeah. Blessing.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you, sir. All right, I got 1 minute left here. So I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who tuned in. My apologies to the people on YouTube who got abandoned. I'll try to get something posted so it can be seen. Anyway, thank you all for being here. It really is such a privilege to be in your presence. Remember, I got a class coming up on Thursday. If you go to gpwalsh.com/mystic, I'll be discussing the same things I discussed on this show. I'm taking questions. We'll be going into some detail. So that's gpwalsh.com/mystic, and you can register for a two-hour workshop. So thank you all for being with me. I love you all. Until next time, Satsang with G.